So we're reading from Luke chapter 17, starting at verse 20, and it's on page 58 of the Luke's Gospel that you have. So starting at verse 20. Being asked by the Pharisees when the kingdom of God would come, he answered them, "The kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, 'Look, here it is,' or 'There,' for behold, the kingdom of God is in the midst of you." And he said to the disciples, "The days are coming when you will desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and you will not see it. And they will say to you, 'Look there,' or 'Look here.' Do not go out or follow them. For as the lightning flashes and lights up the sky from one side to the other, so will the Son of Man be in his day. But first, he must suffer many things and be rejected by this generation. Just as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the Son of Man. They were eating and drinking and marrying and being given in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise, just as it was in the days of Lot, they were eating and drinking, buying and selling, planting and building, but on the day when Lot went out from Sodom, fire and sulfur rained from heaven and destroyed them all. So will it be on the day when the Son of Man is revealed. On that day, let the one who is on the housetop with his goods in the house not come down to take them away. And likewise, let the one who is in the field not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever seeks to preserve his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life will keep it. I tell you, in that night there will be two in one bed. One will be taken and the other left. There will be two women grinding together. One will be taken and the other left." And they said to him, "Where, Lord?" He said to them, "Where the corpse is, there the vultures will gather."
Thank you. It's lovely to be back here with you again. As I said, my name's Nick. I'm a regular here, although not as regular as I'd always like to be. And it's lovely to be with you to talk through this bit of Luke together. I wonder, though, if you're anything like me, are you a planner? Are you a dreamer? Are you a thinker of the future? I do this sometimes when I can't sleep. I will lie awake and I'll think about what the future has to offer me. I'll think through the long list of jobs that I know I need to get done around the house, the painting that needs done, the gardening that urgently needs to be finished, and I'll wonder when I'll do it. I'll imagine the holidays that I might get to take again when the children have grown up and I can bear the thought of getting on a plane with them. I'll think about what the future holds for my work, or what the future holds for my children. What are they going to do when they grow up? What will they grow up to be like? I wonder, how far into the future do you like to plan? Are you like me? Do you dream big dreams of the future? Or do you struggle to think past the next week, what you're going to do at the weekend or what you're going to have for dinner tomorrow? So today, I'd like to encourage you to properly think about a question. I'm going to leave some time for you to have a think about it before I continue. This time next year, what do you think you're going to be doing? For some of you, the answer will probably come immediately. You know, I'm finally going to be retired. I'm going to be playing golf. Or I'll definitely have got a new job. I'll have said goodbye to that boss that I just can't stand. Maybe for some of you, next year's something that you're dreading. Will I be back in hospital? Will the cancer have come back? The house is going to be empty. My last child will have gone to university. What am I going to be doing in the evenings when I come home and there's no one there to have supper with? This lunchtime, though, I want to think with you about another possibility. Another possibility. And it's a possibility that for some of you, you will know in the back of your mind is a half-formed shadow of what you think the future might be like, but not one that you really take very seriously on a day-to-day basis. And I know that possibly, for some of you, what I'm going to suggest is a completely alien idea. You may even find it slightly comic. But regardless, it's an idea that Jesus wants us all to take really seriously. And it's this. Maybe next year, for you, for us all, there isn't going to be a this time next year. Maybe there isn't going to be a this time next year. Because Jesus will have come back. As we unpack these verses and we look at what this is going to mean, I think we're going to see that this has huge and potentially life-changing implications. And it's for all of us, whether we're Christian or whether we wouldn't call ourselves Christians. Before we dive into these verses, I think it's worth setting this in a little bit of context. 2 weeks ago, if you were here, we saw in verse 11 that Luke starts a new section in the Gospel with this heading, "To Jerusalem Refrain." And we saw this going to be the start of a pattern that's going to be repeated on the way to Jerusalem. And it's worth thinking, why does Luke do this? And I think he does it, this refrain, to help us to realise that we're getting closer to Jerusalem. Jesus is on the way there. He's been on the way to Jerusalem in Luke's Gospel for quite some time now. And there's a reason why he does it. And I wonder whether it's helpful to think about something that I used to do when I was younger and don't do very much anymore, which is going hill walking. I wasn't very fit then. I'm even less fit now. But the thing I used to hate about hill walking was when you were climbing up the hill and you could see the top in front of you and you heaved and puffed your way to the top. And then you got there and you realised it wasn't the top after all. It was one of those false tops. And the worst climbs of all were when there was false top after false top after false top. And by the time I got to the top, I wished I'd never even started. And here, I think it's a little like this. It's the same with the arrival of this promised kingdom of God. Yes, the healing of lepers, of foreigners. It's a clear sign that the kingdom of God is here. When Jesus, God's king, is crowned on the cross with a crown of thorns, yes, it's a clear sign the kingdom of God is here. But it is also not yet here. And this passage is all about this here, but not yet here-ness about the kingdom of God. Luke puts this little account here very deliberately, I think, to help us see, yes, the kingdom of God is near. The king's with us. But it's also not yet near. Because Jesus hasn't come back. So having put it in some context, I want us to look at this passage under three headings. And I'd love it if you turned out to your sheets and look with me. Because the first of those sections is from verse 22 to verse 25. And I'm going to read them out. "And he said to the disciples, 'The days are coming when you will desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and you will not see it. And they will say to you, "Look there," or "Look here." Do not go out or follow them. For as the lightning flashes and lights up the sky from one side to the other, so will the Son of Man be in his day. But first he must suffer many things and be rejected by this generation." So the heading I want us to look under this section as is, "Don't be misled." It's on the right-hand side of your handouts. Don't be misled. I wonder if you can empathise with Jesus' observation in verse 22. There are days, aren't there, when we really, really want to be in heaven if we're Christians. Maybe like my wife's grandfather, who died a couple of years ago now. He expressed nearly every day for 15 years just how much he wanted to be in heaven. To be with Jesus and to be with his wife again. Maybe you're like that. You just can't wait to be reunited with Jesus and with people who you loved, who've died in the Lord, who you want to see again. Or maybe you're here today and you're not a Christian. You're really welcome, really glad you're here. And maybe for you, what you want is to be living in a world that's just. You see pain and injustice in the papers every day, and you desperately want to live somewhere that's better, where suffering, pain and injustice, they're things of the past and they're gone. Well, Jesus says, when we feel like that, don't be misled by people who promise us something that can seem very alluring. The most blatant of these false promises are those who very explicitly stand up and say, the kingdom's coming tomorrow. I looked it up a couple of days ago on Wikipedia, and I counted 200 examples of people who've promised the day when the kingdom would be here. And the day has come, and the day after, and they've turned out to be false promises. But I think sometimes it can be even more subtle than that. When a politician or sometimes a pastor comes along and he starts to promise a new world here and now. Follow me and you will see that the better world can be had. And I think Jesus wants to say to us, when we're tempted to believe people like that, don't be misled. Jesus' warning, it's there, isn't it, in verse 23. They will say to you, look there or look here. And Jesus says, don't be misled. Do not go out or follow them. When someone comes along and promises that he is God's new anointed prophet, don't believe it. Why? Because when the day comes, when Jesus comes back, we will all see it. It's in verse 24. As the lightning flashes and lights up the sky from one side to the other, so will the Son of Man be in his day. Yes, Jesus is king. Yes, he was there then. But before the kingdom can come, he needed to suffer and to die on the cross. And only then, one day in the future, will the way be opened, Jesus says, for me to come back and to really bring in the kingdom. So this then is our first point this lunchtime. If someone comes along promising you something different, Jesus says, however tempting it might be, don't believe them. Our second heading is from verses 26 to 30. Let's read them again. Just as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the days of the Son of Man. They were eating and drinking and marrying and being given in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise, just as it was in the days of Lot, they were eating and drinking, buying and selling, planting and building. But on the day when Lot went out from Sodom, fire and sulfur rained from heaven and destroyed them all. So will it be on the day when the Son of Man is revealed. So our second heading from that section is, the coming of the kingdom will bring destruction. It will bring destruction. Jesus makes an analogy between two famous Old Testament calamities of destruction to explain what the coming of the kingdom will be like. You're probably fairly familiar with the first, the example of Noah. In Noah's day, Jesus said everyone was getting on with their daily life. They were eating and they were drinking. It said it in verse 27. And then, disaster. The flood came. And unless you were in the ark, you were done for. The same, he said, was true of Lot. And maybe this is an account that we're a bit less familiar with. Lot and his family were in a city called Sodom. Don't know very much about it. And you can read the account for yourself later if you want to in Genesis chapter 19. Lot and his family were warned by God's servant that destruction was coming. Lot, his wife and daughters chose to take notice. Sadly, his sons-in-law chose not to. Lot, he was given the chance to flee, but they were told, don't look back at what was behind them. They had to let go of their old life altogether and to flee. Sadly, Lot's wife, she looked back and she was turned into a pillar of salt while the city burnt and Lot and his daughters escaped unharmed. What? How are we supposed to understand this today? What's Jesus' point in bringing that example to our attention? Well, no doubt it's complicated. And these two accounts in Genesis, they're some of the most ancient historical narratives in the whole Bible. So we have to be careful in how we understand them. But I think there are some important truths that we can draw out of what Jesus, I think, wants us to see in understanding that the situation we're living in today is just like what it was in Noah's day and what it was like in Lot's. Because all around us, the world carries on as though there is no limit to the number of days that lie ahead of us. We all make our plans. Our bosses put out their 5-year strategic visions. We get married. We eat, we drink, we work, we buy houses, we sell houses, we save in our pensions for the future. We live, don't we? As though there are no end to the number of days in front of us. And Jesus says, just as in Lot's day, just as in Noah's day, a time is coming when that perception of reality will be badly shaken. Jesus says, judgment is coming and it will bring destruction. Please, don't ignore Jesus' warning. It really could, he says, be any day. It might not even take another year. It might even be tomorrow. And many of us will be carrying on with our normal daily plans. We'll be working and travelling, eating dinner and doing everything else that we normally do, and then the sky will light up. There will be no denying it. Jesus will be back with us. And then, for many of us, time will have run out. And for those who are not in the great ark of King Jesus, you won't be safe. There isn't anywhere else to be safe from that disaster that is coming. The final heading today, the final section, is from verse 31 to the end. Look down with me and we'll read it again together. On that day, let the one who is on the housetop with his goods in the house not come down to take them away. And likewise, let the one who is in the field not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever seeks to preserve his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life will keep it. I tell you, in that night there will be two in one bed. One will be taken and the other left. There will be two women grinding together. One will be taken and the other left. And they said to him, "Where, Lord?" He said to them, "Where the corpse is, there the vultures will gather." Our heading for this is, the kingdom will be divisive. But as you read these verses, if you're a Christian, I wonder whether you saw what I think the application from this section is for us today. I think what Jesus is talking about in these verses is that being in the ark has to mean completely letting go of our own little mini kingdoms of self-rule. If we want to be in the kingdom when the time comes, we have to completely follow the great king while there's still time. That, I think, is what he means when he says that he wants you to lose our lives so that we can keep them. And that's why I think there's some real practical applications for me, for anyone here who would call themselves a Christian. We have to live in a way that is ready for the kingdom right now. What that means is we've got to hold, I think, very lightly to the things of the here and the now. I think this is why Jesus tells his disciples, remember Lot's wife. The point was, wasn't it, that she looked back to Sodom, the city from which she was fleeing. I think it was supposed to be a little picture of fleeing, but also not really fleeing from destruction. If you're here today and you are following Jesus, please listen carefully to what he wants us to do. I think he wants to make sure we're ready. Don't try and live lives, he said, both half in and half out of the ark. Because Jesus says a time is coming where there will be great division. There will be great division. When the kingdom comes, everyone will be divided very clearly into two categories. Either you are in or you are out. That's the point, I think, of the two people in the field or the two people grinding corn together. It's to make clear that the division between people will be really stark. For some of you, I wonder if you're Christians, you may have understood these verses in the past to be talking about something called the rapture. And this is a way that some Christians will think about the end times. I think it's important to say our understanding about the precise way in which the kingdom will come is something about which Christians can have genuine disagreement. We can all have different views from the Bible and disagree about them very genuinely. But I think it's worth being clear that I don't think that's what these verses are talking about. The rapture is this idea that when Jesus comes back the first time, he will take some Christians away to be with him and leave those who aren't Christian behind, and then that the world will run on for a period of time. The thing here in these verses, though, is I think it's far from clear whether you want to be taken away or not. I think Jesus leaves it quite ambiguously. I don't think that's the point he's trying to make. I think the taken away and left, he's using that language to explain the idea of the difference, the distinction, the separating out into two categories. If you want to talk about that afterwards, I'd be very happy to chat to you about it afterwards. I think the point Jesus is trying to make, though, is very clear. When he comes back, there'll be two categories. Either you'll be in, or you won't be. Safe in the great ark of King Jesus, or not. These verses, they don't leave room for middle ground. A fence to comfortably sit on. Space for those who are indecisive. Please, if you're here today and you're not following Jesus, do take what he says seriously. Do think about it. Because I think he wants us to all know that when he comes back, the division is going to be clear. You will either be in or you'll be out. I'd love the chance to chat to you more about this if you'd like to, or talk to the person you came with, because it's really, really important.